Well, for as long as we've heard about President Donald Trump, we've also heard about Jared and Ivanka Trump, the president's daughter and son-in-law. They've generated thousands of headlines since Donald Trump first announced his candidacy in 2015. Despite early reports that they wanted to steer clear of the limelight, Jivanka, as they're called, have been the subject of cable news roundtables, 5,000-word think pieces, and multiple SNL parodies.
A woman like her deserves a fragrance all her own, a scent made just for her, because she's beautiful. She's powerful. She's complicit.
How much power, though, do Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump really have? Investigative journalist Vicki Ward explains that very question in her latest book, Kushner, Inc., Greed, Ambition, Corruption, The Extraordinary Story of Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump. She joins me now from NPR in New York. Vicki, welcome to 1A.
Thank you for having me, Todd.
It's so great to talk to you. Vicki, I want to start out with Jordan, who tweeted this at us. Wasn't Ivanka Trump supposed to be working on women's issues in the workplace or maternity leave or something? And what does Jared even do besides skulk around the White House texting foreign dignitaries? Now, Jordan seems to be taking rather a dim view of this couple, but it's such a basic question. What is Ivanka's job in the White House? What's Jared's job? He does more than text.
Right. Yes. The secretary of everything. I think you see the power of this couple, right? It's deductible if you look at the body count around them. Since they've gone into the White House, you know, where are we? We're into the above 40 people, 40 senior White House officials who've been in their way, have either been fired or quit. So I think that is very, very telling that, you know, what you really have in this White House is a family business, a family real estate business. I mean, one of the reasons that I got interested in writing this story is that my background is actually in writing about money, the nexus of power and money. And my previous book was about the world of real estate in New York. And I wanted to see what happened when the Trump and Kushner worlds, which I was very familiar with, moved to Washington, whether they would, you know, sort of change it, whether Washington would change them, or in fact they would come in and it would be business as usual in the White House. And I think you see it's business as usual, Trump and Kushner style, in this White House.
I'm Todd Zwillick. You're listening to 1A. It's business as usual in the Jared and Ivanka style in this White House. Vicki Ward, explain that a little bit. Your reporting goes so deeply, especially into Jared Kushner's business dealings and the culture around him in New York. And now you're saying they've simply transplanted that to the White House.
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, I think that, you know, what I try and show in the book is the mentality that Jared and Ivanka grew up in, the culture that they grew up in. It's one that really has a disdain for rules. Rules are really for other people, perhaps poorer people. And so when they come into the White House, it's one set of rules for them and a different set of rules for everyone else. So, for example, most people, when they go into government, they go in for public service. That means that they automatically are required to divest of stocks, of shares, of anything that could be a conflict of interest. Well, in both Jared and Ivanka's case, they would say, well, they abided by ethics rules, but the ethics rules for them, you know, put them in a very strange position. You know, Ivanka, for 18 months, kept hold of a fashion business that was extremely reliant on foreign investment to keep it afloat, not least because once once her father became president, a lot of the major department stores, you know, dropped it. And so she would then have this habit of putting herself on the line when he was on phone calls to foreign leaders, or put herself in a room when he was meeting with foreign leaders. And suddenly, you know, at the same time as those kind of meetings were happening, there would be lots of trademark issued, trademarks issued to the Ivanka Trump line. So the perception was certainly that she viewed government as one giant product placement exercise. And I think, you know, and people around her, as I sort of report in the book, people in the State Department who, you know, are used to really abiding by protocol and who know that, you know, we have very strict rules that you don't go into government to profit. I mean, that's just rule number one. They were sort of horrified by the impropriety of the appearance of all of this. Jared Kushner inserted himself into absolutely everything. But I think the thing that is most troubling in the book is the way that he inserts himself into the Middle East and into foreign, you know, our foreign diplomacy, foreign policy making. You know, Rex Tillerson's great mistake was to think that just because he had the title Secretary of State, he actually had the job Secretary of State. You know, he didn't count on Jared Kushner, who arrives in this White House with a huge financial problem. The clock is ticking. He and his father, and you have to remember, one of the themes of the book is how both Jared and Ivanka are extremely dominated and identified by their respective fathers, most unusually so for adults in their late 30s. And the Kushners have this ticking time bomb, this Maltese Falcon, this financial crisis, this building in New York, 666 Fifth Avenue, where the loan of $1.4 billion is due in February 2019. And it's already been made very clear that no domestic investor is going to touch this thing with a 50-foot pole. One of the partners in this building, you know, said that publicly that it would be worth more if it was just dirt. So they desperately need foreign investment. So you have to then bear that in mind when you look at everything that Jared Kushner does when it comes to foreign policy making, immediately cutting out the normal protocols, which would mean that he wouldn't be making any decision or having any discussions with Middle East potentates without looping in the National Security Council or the State Department. But as you just said, Todd, he has endless communications on WhatsApp, and nobody else knows what on earth is going on for there, on those conversations. And, you know, there was alarm within the senior ranks of the State Department when they watched Jared Kushner push for the first U.S. Official visit, the president's first official visit overseas, to be not to a country with shared democratic values, but to the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. That raised a lot of eyebrows, and rightly so.
Well, we want to talk much more about Ivanka Trump, Jared Kushner, and especially Jared Kushner's activities in the Middle East and how they might intersect with his own financial concerns. That's why Vicky Ward is here, investigative journalist Vicky Ward, on her latest book, Kushner, Inc. There's more to come after this short break. I'm Todd Zwillick. This is 1A. Stay close. Back now to my conversation about Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump with investigative journalist and author Vicky Ward. Vicky, you wrote in your book, you've called Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump two people in disguise, especially as it relates to their image as counterweights to their fathers. What does that mean, two people in disguise?
Well, look, I mean, I think that unlike their respective fathers, who are, I mean, Charlie Kushner is less well known, obviously, than the president. But both men are known for being quite irascible, for losing their temper. I mean, the president is known, he's not known for being particularly smooth or sophisticated, or, he doesn't have an extensive vocabulary. I think the hope for Jared and Ivanka, who do present very well. They're very polished. They're very poised. They're very attractive. That was that when, you know, the ironic reason that they even came into this government was that Steve Bannon, of all people, thought that they would need sort of Ivanka's calming, moderating presence to help calm down her father during his most sort of irascible moments. He was thinking back, Bannon was thinking back to Billy Bush Weekend. And you know, he said this to Don McGahn, then the White House counsel, and to Reince Priebus, then the, you know, incoming chief of staff, because there were, you know, we have nepotism laws in this country for a reason, and nobody really liked the legal opinion that had been drawn up that would have made an exception, first for Jared and then for Ivanka. And it was Bannon who sort of pulled the trigger and said, no, let's do it. Let's let them in.
But what about that moderating influence? I understand the psychology of having calm, poised, attractive Ivanka to calm her father down because he's irascible. That I get. But we have been led to believe ever since the campaign, Vicky, that these two are politically moderating on Donald Trump. They might be Democrats. In fact, they probably are. They will rein Donald Trump in. They have a moderating influence on the political debates inside the White House. We all know that narrative. Is there any evidence that it's actually true?
No, and in fact, quite the opposite. I think the reporting in my book shows that really Ivanka and Jared have gone in to the White House not for public service and not for any ideology. They've gone in for self-service. And, you know, I mean, I think so many examples. One of the most startling, however, is Ivanka Trump's reaction behind the scenes to what her father said about Charlottesville. If you remember, after that terrible incident where Heather Heyer was killed, her father said, you know, there were very fine people on both sides. And, I think the assumption was, you know, Jared and Ivanka were in fact away during the sort of immediate aftermath of that. But I think that people, again, would have believed in the disguise, would have believed that Ivanka wouldn't have approved of those kind of words. Gary Cohn, senior economic advisor, was so upset by what had happened that he was prepared to resign, and he dropped by their house on the Friday night in Bedminster, New Jersey, at the Trump compound, and said, you know, I need to resign. I'm from a family of immigrants. I'm Jewish. I can't buy into this sort of language, this kind of behavior. And Ivanka said, no, you don't understand. My father never said that. That was truly horrifying for Gary Cohn to hear. He never looked at them the same way again. And I think it's extremely telling. I have another scene in the book much earlier to do with the Muslim travel ban. And what's really interesting about that is that yet again, when that was kind of being rolled out on a Friday night very early on in the administration, Gary Cohn again is the one who says to Jared, have you heard about this? We got to stop this. And Jared sort of shrugs and says, no, the president really wants to do it. It's only when Jared and Ivanka get into trouble personally, because she then posts a photograph of them in black tie going off to a big Washington dinner the next night. Well, meanwhile, there are scenes of absolute chaos across the world, you know, as airports are congested, as the fallout from this travel ban. And, you know, there's a meme that goes around, let them eat cake, that Ivanka changes her tune. But it's really all about self-preservation. It's not because at the beginning she thought what her father's administration was doing was wrong.
Well, this was an episode that intersected Jared and Ivanka with the administration's foreign policy. And I want to talk to you more about that, Vicky Ward, because you write in your book, and you've spoken in detail about Jared Kushner's dealings in the Middle East with foreign governments and how they tie back to his own personal interests. I want to play for you a little clip. Here is Jared Kushner at a Time magazine event that was just last week. This was the Time 100, where powerful, celebrated, and usually very good-looking people show up to be feted by Time magazine, sell lots of issues, put them on the cover, and have a big event where people come out to hear them speak. Jared Kushner made some waves with this comment when he was asked about the Mueller investigation.
Quite frankly, the whole thing's just a big distraction for the country. And you look at, you know, what Russia did, you know, buying some Facebook ads to try to sow dissent and do it. And it's a terrible thing. But I think the investigations and all of the speculation that's happened for the last 2 years has had a much harsher impact on our democracy than a couple of Facebook ads.
A couple of Facebook ads was all Jared Kushner had to say about the Russia investigation. Nowhere near accurate what the Mueller report actually had to say, what the entire intelligence community has had to say about coordinated Russian interference in the election, not to mention the whole other side of it, which is that the Mueller report explicitly did not exonerate the president from obstruction of justice, an extremely serious situation. Jared Kushner says a couple of Facebook ads.
Yeah, and you may have noticed, Todd, even Senator Lindsey Graham, who has been, you know, probably the president's number one defender and certainly been Jared Kushner's number one defender, walked that back over the weekend, said, you know, he liked Jared, but that he thought that Jared had misspoken. You know, in the book, I use a phrase from Star Trek. I'm quoting someone in the world of New York real estate. Alternate distortion field is the way that they viewed Jared Kushner's unrealistic view of how to price certain of his buildings. And I think that it doesn't matter if somebody suffers from that, if they're just working for their father in the family New York real estate business. But it really does matter if that person then enters the highest echelons of government and is in charge of foreign policy making, and as you said, has got this big financial problem. And make no mistake, his big financial problem is certainly one of the major reasons why nobody, none of the intelligence or security agencies would have given Jared or Ivanka a security clearance. That it was left to the president to override them.
Well,
which is, of course.
I think I've heard you say, Vicky, at one point that Americans simply cannot understand United States Mideast policy now in Israel or towards Iran, Qatar, the UAE, without understanding Jared Kushner's relationship with some of these governments and with Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince of the Saudi royals himself.
Yes. I mean, so it's complicated. So many different levels. But if you just look at the facts. So the Kushners need money. Behind the scenes, no one realizes in the first spring of the administration, 2017, Charles Kushner asks the Qataris, very rich country, longtime rival of Saudi Arabia. Everybody in the Middle East in that region wants their resources because they are so rich, would like to overthrow them. Charles Kushner asks them for $1 billion to save his building. They turn him down because they think it's an uneconomic deal. Jared, meanwhile, is pushing for this summit in Riyadh, which is the theme of which supposedly is all about cooperation in the Gulf, terrorism, and, you know, everyone.
We all remember when President Trump went to that summit, and the famous photograph where the leaders put their hands on the big orb that turned into a meme to jog people's memory. I'm Todd Zwillick. This is 1A. Vicky Ward, go right ahead. The principals are at a big summit in Saudi Arabia after the Kushners have declared that they need vast amounts of money for their real estate in New York.
Right. And also, don't forget, Jared is looking for money to subsidize his peace plan, which is sort of being dictated to him by Bibi Netanyahu, a very, very old family friend of the Kushners. So the summit takes place. Theme is meant to be cooperation. 10 days later, the Saudis make a mockery of the idea of cooperation by leading with the United Arab Emirates, the ally, Bahrain and Egypt, a blockade of Qatar, where there is an American airbase. That is our security in the region on the line. Rex Tillerson and then Defence Secretary James Mattis were in Australia at an annual sort of meeting of them and their counterparts. Were absolutely horrified to hear this and immediately flew into the area to try to sort it out. But Tillerson knew that the Saudis and the Emiratis would never have dared try and pull a stunt like this without getting a green light from the White House, given that, because we have an airbase there. And he knew, because of the way that Jared Kushner protected that relationship, that it was Jared who had in fact given the signal to MBS and his mentor, MBZ, the Crown Prince of Abu Dhabi. And we then go into this extraordinary sort of nine-month period where, again, Jared is the one in charge, controlling the WhatsApp communications between himself and MBS. He flies into Saudi Arabia in the late 2017, stays up all night with MBS. The next thing we know, that MBS has rounded up most of the ruling families of Saudi Arabia, and he imprisons them in the Ritz-Carlton, and he takes away a lot of their money. Now, what's it? Rex Tillerson said to Jared, "Well, isn't it interesting that he didn't round up his own family, Jared? Don't you think it's statistically unlikely that his own relatives are not also corrupt?" And Jared didn't want to know, because what he was really doing was working a lot, aligning himself with the Middle East princes to get rid of Tillerson, who was becoming a nuisance and would indeed resign. But the sort of plot gets even stranger because MBS then arrives in the spring of 2018 in Washington. And you have to remember that MBS, all of this is about money. Everybody wants money. Jared wants money. MBS wants money to pay for the war in Yemen. And because oil prices had taken a nosedive, and because he hadn't got the blockade of Qatar hadn't worked. So he arrives in Washington and the president asks him for $4 billion to help rebuilding Syria. MBS drags his feet. The meeting doesn't go at all well. Then enter the Emir of Qatar. He comes dressed in a suit rather than in his robes. He's paid careful attention to what went wrong in MBS's meeting. He comes in his suit and he says to the president, and he makes it very clear to Jared, he's got funds, he's got lots and lots of money, but he's got a problem with this blockade and with this flyover. And what's fascinating is that within a two-week period, the US, at the end of April, the US withdraws its support of the blockade of Qatar. And suddenly this most extraordinary deal that nobody in New York thinks makes any sense occurs to bail the Kushners out of their building.
And I wanted
whereby,
and that's exactly where I wanted to end, because people might remember the reversal. President Trump initially tweeted in favor of the blockade. Then it was reversed when people everywhere, right, including the Secretary of State, were saying, what the heck is going on here? We have just about a minute left. Vicky Ward Patrick asks, February 2019 has passed. What happened to the loan on the Kushner building, 666 Fifth Avenue?
So?
And we have just a couple seconds.
Yes. So what happened was a Canadian company, Brookfield, whose largest outside shareholder is the Qatari government, did a deal. They didn't buy the building. They did a loan whereby they signed a 99-year lease. All of it was paid up front. That's unheard of. Makes no financial sense. But this means that the Kushners not only get to, they're bailed out, they also, all their tax issues around the building are solved as well. Now, the Brookfield has denied that Qatar had nothing to do with it. But to be honest, the deal stinks. Mm. And I quote numerous real estate developers when I say that.
If the financial arrangements and concerns of Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner sound complex, they certainly are. But in her book, Vicky Ward really untangles them. And the other remarkable thing about it is how much everyone seemed to want to talk to her. This is not an anonymously sourced book where no one would talk to the author. It's quite the opposite. Vicky Ward, investigative journalist, author of Kushner, Inc., Greed, Ambition, Corruption, The Extraordinary Story of Jared and Ivanka. Vicky, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This show was produced by Paige Osborne. You can learn more about her and the rest of the staff on the website. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Todd Zwillick. Thank you so much for being with us this hour. This is 1A.